The year 1969 began with me moving back to Saskatchewan. My family left Yorkton and moved to LA in January 56. 13 years later, almost to the day, I am back in Yorkton. First of all, I had to spend the night in the Minneapolis airport, which I still remember vividly.
What will Rich and Linda think? Not to mention Woodrow Stuhl.
Please don't mention
Milton Pipe. I owe him a lot of money for the airport.
You owe a lot of people a lot of money for a lot of airports.
Wow. And the guy they caught? The guy they caught in Minnesota, because he went to this flying school, goes, I want to learn to just fly. Just fly it, not take it off, not land it. Uh-huh. Just want to fly it.
Oh, sure. Whoa. Sign here.
Sign right here. Go to jail.
Give me your U.S. Plus card.
Okay. There and this guy, where did he learn to become a Taliban, Al-Qaeda extremist?
Taliban. Excuse me. We have some Buddhist writers. Do you have an answer to that?
Yes, the answer is he didn't learn it. He didn't learn it in Arabia. He didn't learn it from some camel jockey in the Gulf. Yeah. He learned it in a mosque in Montreal.
Yeah.
He goes into Montreal, and there's a Bin Laden tape.
Well, then let's drop French toast on him.
That's it.
On Canada, but they're our neighbors.
No, not on Canada.
We can't go to war with Canada. No one would understand that. How could you explain it?
It's already been done
in
the cartoon.
Yeah, you're right.
Blame Canada.
We could pour maple syrup on the Taliban, man.
Oh, that's Canadian.
That would stick them in their cave.
Then flew on to Winnipeg, and from there to Yorkton. My cousin Howard picked me up at the airport. It was snowing. Snowflakes, which I hadn't seen since 1955, reminded me of the stars outside of the Enterprise as it accelerates at the beginning of Star Trek.
Space, a final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
After spending a few months on the prairies, I moved to Ottawa to study journalism at Carleton University. Being a journalist in Canada's capital seemed like a good idea at the time. Before moving back to Canada, I had spent a semester at USC and had studied radio and TV production there. This easily got me a job at the Carleton radio station, which had recently acquired new equipment donated by another radio station and needed someone who knew what to do with it. My theme song was Old Brown Dog, which I thought was a pretty good theme song for someone named Cat.
Old Brown Dog. Sipping through the rooms, through the dust, old chalk on the floor. Nothing here, nothing there, stands in the door. Old brown house, nobody there anymore.
I had creative friends in L.A., but I didn't live with them. At Carleton, creative people were literally underfoot all the time in my residence, which inspired me to be even more creative. I started writing for the school newspaper, reviewing movies and albums. Saw a lot of films growing up in L.A. where so many of them were made, but in Ottawa, I spent more time in a theater than I did watching TV. Submitted a film script to the student council, which contained a scene where a popular herb was being consumed. They asked me if I had ever consumed such a substance, and I said no. My friends in L.A. did. Even teachers suggested I try it, but I thought it would drive me crazy.
thing is that the elves, who are like, who have all the knowledge of nature, right? I mean, like, they are like masters of nature and in harmony with it.
They're monkeys.
Yeah, like monkeys. No, wait, let me read into that, all right, then you can come back, which is, right. What I'm saying is that, and they live in the trees, right, and in Flans, they're called, and they're masters of nature, and they drink. There's drink and laughter in the hall, but they don't smoke any grass or any herbs. I mean, masters of nature and know what everything
that?
Is. What? Well, as far as Tolkien says, because they don't do it in the Tolkien book, and they don't mention it, and they talk about drinking, you know, and having a wonderful time. I want to know why they don't smoke grass, or hashish, or opium, or any smoking, you know, thing.
Well, the hobbits smoke. I mean, the point is very clearly made in the books that the hobbits smoke.
Tobacco. Yeah.
Well, or whatever it
whatever
is
that,
that
is.
They smoke. But, I mean, the idea of smoking,
right.
I mean, the idea of smoking, not smoking a specific thing, but the idea of smoking is unique to the hobbits.
That's right. And Gandalf smokes.
Well, yes, he's picked up a quote, bad habit.
Bad habit
quote,
from the hobbits.
From the
right.
hobbits.
And
right.
Saruman, of course, had the tobacco, the long bottom leaf, imported
for his own
for his own
stock,
use.
Right.
So you know, everybody was getting high, I guess, because tobacco would be like one of those generic words for what you like to smoke and makes you feel good.
When I told that to the student counselors deciding which screenplay to fund, I was ruled too inauthentic. So some of my new friends offered to deprive me of my herbal virginity. My friends in LA had always told me it would greatly enhance my already vast appreciation of music. Instead, my friends played the soundtrack from Hair, which I hated, despite being an old fan of Broadway musicals. I went back to my room and put on the first Quicksilver album, back when they only had one album. It sounded pretty good. Then I put on Steve Miller's Sailor, which begins with the immensely trippy tune Song for Our Ancestors. Oh, that's what they're talking about. This is incredible. Thank you. Later, I went into the common room where my colleagues were watching a hockey game. I'd never had any interest in hockey, but I sat down to watch the game and found myself on top of the puck as it zoomed around the ice. This is nice, so the herb wasn't scary at all, but as reported, aesthetically enhancing. Unfortunately, I never had that experience watching hockey again. It returned to tedium, but already great music has remained enhanced up to this day.
Do you remember the LaDain Commission?
Yeah, I do. About dope, right?
Yeah, and they had all these inquiries and, you know, what was it, commissions on marijuana, right?
Right.
And I remember going to one, and the guy said, yeah, we're studying this stuff and the effects it has on people and stuff. And, you know, same thing they're saying now. Sure, it affects your brain and blah, 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 but, you know, it's not that harmful or anything. So why don't you just legalize it? Anyway, that was 50 years ago now, and it's finally starting to happen. But that was one memory. I remember sitting in this hall, and this guy who was like a scientist, right? He was one of the, I don't know what you call them. They had this, I think Trudeau had appointed a commission, right? Studying marijuana, see what's going
right.
on here. Like, how does it affect the brain? Blah, 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 blah.
I remember that,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, he said, I remember him saying, well, it's still illegal, guys. You know, like, if you get caught with one seed in your apartment, you could get busted. So, you know, be careful. But as far as we can tell, it's, you know, blah, 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 not as harmful as everyone says. And that was shit, that was 50 years ago.
That's right.
So that's one memory.
It was also visually enhancing. Not just for flicks, which I watched obsessively. At Christmas time, I flew back to L.A. on student standby. Got good in herb before I got on the plane. And then, lucking out, I landed in first class.
On the 747 when we were flying over, we got talking with a lot of people. And we began to find out some interesting things. Like one guy, kid, came walking by and said, hey, I've got to ask you, aren't you George Matetsky of You Bet Your Half-Life? And
yeah,
I said, yeah. And this cat had seen us at Columbia. And when I was walking out of Bob Grossman's door on Crosby Street, two chicks drove by in a car and said, hey, Dougie at Columbia, want to come up to the loft and smoke some dope? Right?
New York, man.
They were smoking marijuana in the first class.
Incidentally, gentlemen, as
in the first class, they were smoking marijuana in the first class of the plane.
In the first class?
Oh, what's your name,
Mr. Mr. Conklin, Mr. Klein.
When you please come to first class.
Yeah, that's right.
An off-duty stewardess, close to my age, sat down beside me and began talking to me, perhaps because most first-class passengers are more her parents' age. Anyway, as we flew over North America, she pointed things out the window to me, and in particular, as it was Christmas time, the suburbs of cities were full of Christmas lights, glowing against the blue of the snow at sunset. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Thanks, standby and herbs.
It was sure pretty
over the Rockies.
After the movie, we watched this dreadful non-movie called Topaz, which was made by the CIA.
Under the guise of Alfred Hitchcock.
Alfred Hitchcock is an assumed
name.
He's a front. He's a front.
Right.
He's a rubber mask.
Oh, it wasn't even a movie. I mean, it would be complimentary to call it a movie. And then up front, about 12 seats up, is playing on this postage stamp size screen hanging above us, Downhill Racer, which is all very flashy and red and white and blue and yellow and bright sunlight and people going and crowds applauding and all of that, right, with Downhill Racer. It was very splashy. And meanwhile, in our ears was this gray dialogue going on about, did you think the Russians would take Cuba, or is this some secret service you've been on? My eye is putting out here because I'm going to kill you now. Boom!
Oh.
Falls down. Oh, it was a terrible movie.
It was awful.
It was pretty bad.
Anyway, but down below were the Rocky Mountains, which is where I
and
was
Lake
really.
And Lake Erie was covered with ice and had big cracks in it.
It was the country. And you realize nobody lives between there and here.
No, that was Lake Erie. That's
Lake Erie. Nobody lives between there and there.
The two-thirds of the country is entirely uninhabited, folks, except underground. There are various places with the army.
We didn't see any people there.
And the Dead Sheep Administration.
The Dead Sheep Administration,
right. Lots of mountains and lakes and no people.
When I got to L.A., some friends of my parents were also enjoying their hospitality, and they had a girl my age. Together, for New Year's Eve, we went to see the Firesign Theater, along with Lightning Hopkins and Taj Mahal. Taj was amazing. With Jesse Ed Davis on guitar, with his hair hanging down to his ass, and Bergman's girlfriend purloiner, John Simon, on exquisite piano.
A couple of times we went on trips together, remember? We went to look for the Great Earthquake Fault. We went to the San Andreas Fault once.
I have a tape of some of you splashing through water. Remember that? I think we were going
to
use it for
when
something.
When we went to visit looking for the St. Andreas Fault, we went out to Vasquez Rocks. Yeah. And that was the day after my girlfriend had been stolen from me. The day after John Simon ran away with Brooke.
Took her to Woodstock.
And married her. And I was going, I feel, what am I doing? Here I am in this fort from like, what, Three Feathers or the Bengal Lance.
But it wasn't St. Andreas' fault.
No, and there I am out in the desert trying to figure out what I'm going to do. My girlfriend has been purloined from me.
And loined.
She
was loined.
Yeah.
How we got to Vasquez Rocks?
How did we get to Vasquez Rocks? No,
on
to
the
practice?
Antelope what? Freeway.
Antelope Freeway. And
that was the day we discovered the Antelope Freeway, which then was the freeway to nowhere.
We noticed the fire signs lounging around waiting to go on, and introduced ourselves. I told them I was playing their albums and the mushroom shows on my program in Ottawa. They offered us a hit of their joint they were passing amongst themselves. We toked away with the lads, and then sat down while they got on stage to perform a very loose version of A Life in the Day, as it evolved into Two Places and what would soon become Dwarf. Kind of like being at the Big Bang, only backstage as it was being set up. Back in Ottawa, I actually did attend classes. As a newcomer to Canada, I relished studying Canadian history and literature, though I was unable to convince my prof that Gordon Lightfoot counted as Canadian literature. I also took a class in economics, which I mistakenly thought would be useful, and of course, journalism, my reason for going to Carleton in the first place. As a journalism student, I used to attend sittings of Parliament. I was closely following the Nigerian Civil War and all its atrocities. As the Biafran people starved to death, the member of Parliament from my hometown, Yorkton, Saskatchewan, asked Prime Minister Trudeau, that's Pierre, why we didn't send them some of our wheat, as our storage silos were overflowing.
There is nothing to eat here.
Trudeau said we couldn't encourage separatism in Nigeria because it would encourage Quebec separatism here. Such are the reasons for much of the world's suffering.
You know, the Firesign Theater record, one of the early ones, ended with the dropping of
Of books
8 million hardbound copies of The Naked Lunch.
On what? What country?
On the last outpost of unhip resistance in northern Nigeria.
Right. Here's a little article from a paper yesterday, Citizen News. Strictly personal, by Sidney J. Harris. And by the way, I'd like to read the whole thing. I think he's really written an interesting article here. I almost lost control of my car on the expressway the other day. I was driving along listening to the radio when an announcer delivered a public service message. It was sponsored by a group called, are you ready? Bibles for Biafra. It seems that during the recent Nigerian Biafran hostilities, most of the Bibles had been bombed into oblivion, and there is a pressing need for the Lord's word in that part of the world. How can the human race possibly hope to survive when we are so full of absurd and fatal contradictions? What about the human beings who were blown to bits through no fault of their own? What about a bitter nationalistic rivalry that ignored and flouted every lesson in the Bible? Nothing has done organized religion more damage in the eyes of thinking people, and especially of youth, than its acquiescence in the act of war. If the Bible were really understood in the fullness of its eschatology, excuse me, it sounds dirty, I know, but it's really not, eschatology, look that one up, Gesundheit. Then the idolatry...
Bless you.
No, let's not lose his point here. Then the idolatry of nationalism would be abolished. The false god of the state would no longer be worshipped. And though people might continue to remain aggressive as individuals, this aggressiveness could no longer be commandeered by political leaders seeking their own power and glory under the guise of patriotism. Bibles are the last thing needed in Biafra in Nigeria or anywhere else if they are continued to be used as they have been in the past. What we ought to drop on them are 2,000 hardbound copies of The Naked Lunch.
It wasn't only herbally inspired visions that impressed me that year. Ottawa was an intensely beautiful city that the snow only made more so. In my Vegas collage, I mentioned going outside in Ottawa in winter and having my glasses fogged up by my tea, and the way that diffused light coming from the streetlights. It was that kind of moment. It was that kind of time. I remember going to the river near the campus and feeling a strange sense of communion, almost communication with that river. As we are largely water, that's not chemically surprising. But as someone with no interest in mysticism, having been brought up by Sputnik, it was a strange experience, and it predated that first exposure to mind-altering herbs.
Rivers are difficult to find, although we can always hear them.
Even further back in time, when I was going to USC in the fall of 68, I had a very strange experience. I lived in the hills overlooking the San Fernando Valley, and my ramp, off-ramp and on-ramp, was called Woodman, for Woodman Avenue, the main street that goes up into the hills. From the Ventura Freeway, I got on the Hollywood Freeway and then changed to the Harbor Freeway, which took me downtown to the USC campus, where George Tirebiter chases dogs and watches out for UFOs to this day. One day after class, I was on my way back to the valley. No problems getting from the harbor to the Hollywood. Eric Anderson was singing Foolish Like the Flowers on the radio as I tried to merge onto the Ventura Freeway. Then things started to get very weird. The exits are on the right in real life. In my Twilight Zone moment, they were on the left. Something was very wrong with my optical processing. I knew I had to get into the right lane to exit at Woodman, even though it appeared on the left. As soon as it was necessary, it appeared in its proper place, and I was able to exit the Ventura Freeway at the Woodman exit. Nothing like that ever happened to me before or since, but it happened then.
The warm of wanting you was
harmonized with deep magentas. It's so sad when lovers they must sleep. It's so sad. Now I'm glad, happy just to be. We were foolish like the flowers to think of love like that, it could be ours.
Ottawa had a folk club called Libou, and a friend and I saw Eric Anderson there. He sang Foolish Like the Flowers, but the exit stayed in place. Perhaps because of my age, my distance from where I grew up, and suddenly living with lots of other folks my age of similar interests and inclinations, I spend a lot more time with other people than I ever had. Two of my friends were named Steve. One was from Peterborough and the other from Belleville, Ontario. Steve from Belleville was a few years older and had a friend who actually had a car. One evening we went to see a movie. Both Steves, the car guy, probably other people, and me. I think Peterborough Steve left our group after the flick. On the drive back to Carleton, the car guy said of the departed Steve, "In the future, he will become very important, very powerful." He was that charismatic even then. After Christmas, he moved off campus, and I moved into his room, shared with C. Dale, another friend to this day. We used to go and visit him in his luxurious new space. One problem with the herb is that it can make you very hungry. One afternoon, we were starving, so Peterborough Steve and his roommate made an omelet. The only omelets I'd had before were made by my mother, and they were hideous. She put milk in them, poisonous. But I was hungry enough to eat whatever my friends came up with, and it turned out to be delicious. Just eggs, tomato, and cheese. No vile milk. It has been a staple of my diet ever since.
All right. You know who this is? This is Bebop Loco Baby, the dream shifter, the one who knows, the radio man who drives the big luminous green egg across the southwest deserts of the night. And man, I've got to tell you, am I hungry? I will answer my own question because, yes, I am hungry. So hungry, very hungry. After a night of drifting across the Bahadas, of avoiding the basilisk, who is crowing like the morning and destroying the land before him, I'm looking out for a breakfast place that's got a parking space for a big luminous green egg and a place where a man like me, a radio man, can get some harsh browns and some eggs that are not the eggs of the evil basilisk. El Basilisco. I need a place with mirrors, see? Those that are the best enemies of the evil basilisk. I need a place for breakfast with mirrors, with harsh browns and eggs on a mirror, for instance. A dish the basilisk cannot stand, especially when served up with bacon rassers or sausages of chimerical creatures. I need a weasel for a companion, a stoat that floats, a white person with four legs and an avoidance of eagles on the highway. I am Bebop Lobo, baby. The Night Wolf.
I told you there was going to be poetry on this show.
Hey, man, have you ever had the eggs basilisco with the Tabasco, man? You know, really?
Tabascalisco.
Tabascalisco. And, you know, right. when you serve them on the mirror, the demons can't come, like, and eat your breakfast. Because if they see themselves, they turn to stone,
Do you know
man.
What that piece of material made me feel like? Like somebody just took the top of my head off, like when you eat one of those eggs in an egg cup.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that could be a basilisk egg. See, that's what you have to watch out for. Excuse me, I'll go back to being Bebop here for a minute.
Okay. You've
got to watch
him?
Out for the basilisk, man. It is a combination of a snake and a rooster.
Oh, no.
The tying thing here, of course, is eggs.
Eggs.
Eggs, man.
They're everywhere.
And we're going to get into them later. Because I understand Bob Hines going to take us to Fun Fun Towers and to the Great and Satan's Tower.
I remember long night talks with Belleville Steve while listening to Vince Guaraldi and Steve Miller. On one of those talks, I came up with the infinite option theory. Anything can happen. A good point of view for a young person.
Oh.
At the end of the school year, I once again boarded a flight for LA, only to be kicked off the plane for not having registered for the American draft.
Well, come on, all of you big, strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Woo-hoo, we're all gonna die. Now come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. Why, man, this is war, a go-go. There's plenty good money to be made. Supplying the army, rules of the trade. Just open David if they drop the bomb. We're dropping on the Viet Cong. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, you all gonna die.
Instead, I flew back to Saskatchewan. While staying there, my cousin Terry, Howard's younger brother, introduced me to a female fellow badminton enthusiast. I was so entranced with that introduction that I changed universities from Carleton to the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon. More of that on another collage. When I tried to fly to LA from Calgary, I had no problems at all. While in LA that summer, I discovered the Firesign were back on the radio with their hour-hour shows. I was lucky to tape the last six episodes of the show. These became a lifeline to the English language when I moved to Japan a year later.